Welcome back to the Male Chase Show. Last time I had my guest here, I learned so much. I know you guys learned so much. I watch her all the time. She is doing a great service to our nation and the world. And she will tell you a little bit about herself, and we will get into what she's doing. I'm honored to welcome back Harlan Borschenko. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, thank you for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Oh, wow. Well, I watch your show. You have a show on YouTube that's Socialism Saturdays. And I have learned so much from you over this time. I'd always studied Mao's revolution, the communist revolution, socialism. But it's different to put it into actual context in real time with what we're living through. So before we get into what you are doing, which is amazing, I believe, I want to talk a little bit about your background, because you're also, you know, you have a great education for this as well, and you're really putting it to use.
Yeah, so my background is I'm an industrial organizational psychologist by training. So before I got into this whole game, I was doing a lot of corporate training. I was teaching people how to communicate better. I wrote a book about mindfulness in the workplace. But what came in really handy, and it wasn't something I anticipated at all, is doing industrial organizational psychology. What I had to do was go into sometimes very large organizations and evaluate the social system of the organization to say, okay, here's how people are working together. Here's how people are communicating. Here's where the dysfunction is. Here are the outcomes that you're going to have. And to be able to advise workplaces on how do you create a productive and fulfilling and functional work environment where people generally get along and people can do stuff and stuff like that. So when I started, you know, I got kind of accidentally booted into politics in early 2020 when I went viral on the internet for being a Democrat who went to a Trump rally. This was a world I didn't understand at all. And I had to learn very, very quickly about it. But what I did understand was evaluating social systems. And so I started to kind of, you know, being a Democrat that kind of red-pilled and woke up in the public eye, it's right. An odd thing to go through because you don't know what's real and what's fake. You don't know how many lies you were told, you know, your entire life about what's actually going on in the world. And so I had to go back and like reverse engineer how many lies did the left tell me? And in the process of doing so, I really started to just apply a lot of my organizational psychology skills to evaluating the social system that we're in to reverse engineer it, to figure it out. And so it's kind of an odd background to have, I know, to be in this space, but I actually do think it served me very well, because with the experience I have and with understanding people and psychology like I do, I'm able to predict what people are going to say. I'm able to put frameworks around how people behave. And it all of a sudden, it makes things that seem complicated and messy when you have a basic framework to understand how people are doing things, why they're doing things, recognizing the patterns that show up over and over and over and over and over again. It simplifies a lot of stuff down. And when we're able to simplify it, we're able to tell where they're going next.
Yeah. Now, when you went to that Trump rally, that was 2020 up to the 2020 election. Now, since then, you've really had a different perspective and point of view than you had prior. Now, since 2020, in that world, because you've now kind of evaluated all of it, what do you think has changed in the MAGA Trump world since 2020 to now, if you can kind of boil that down?
Gosh, Mel, you're trying to get me in trouble with the conservatives, aren't you? Because they're not going to like my evaluation on this.
It's important. Listen, it's
important. You know, I mean, I appreciate you asking the question, because I do actually think that conservatives need to hear this. So when I woke up in 20, let me just cut to brass tacks. Yeah. I would not red pill today in the same way that I did in 2020. It wouldn't happen. Because when I woke up in 2020, the major talking points and I woke up like very, very, like I actually started red pilling in 2019. So by early 2020, I was kind of like off and running. But what was going on then, and this is when Trump was still in office, is conservatives were talking about individual liberties, freedom of speech, anti-censorship, freedom for everyone. They were talking about how we're a big tent. Like that was a big talking point. Like Trump is the big tent that's bringing everyone in. And I was like, all right, like I don't agree with you guys on a lot of stuff, but like I can get on board with this, because ultimately freedom of speech is actually my biggest issue. And so if we can agree on that, then, you know, we can put some other stuff to the side for right now, because there are bigger problems and we can bicker about that stuff later. Well, after Joe Biden got into office, from my perspective, the right completely changed. Now, it didn't change overnight, but it was like a slow, gradual build that I identified very early on where they stopped talking about the big tent. I remember like they started kicking people out of the conservative right. And like, I was never really a conservative, but I remember a couple weeks after Joe Biden got into office, I was actually involved in debates about like, should LGBT people be quote unquote allowed on the right? Now, I'm not LGBT, but that's an issue I feel very strongly about. It's like just treating everyone with like love and consideration and things like that. And I'm like, who are you to tell people that they can't be conservative because they're gay or they're trans or, and bigger picture than that, you're driving away voters.
Right.
And so then I started getting involved in like politics in New Hampshire. I ended up becoming a libertarian, which is something I still believe very strongly in today. Well, guess what? There's a whole nother round of campaigns where conservatives were like, libertarians, we don't like you, GT. TFO, like, don't vote for us. I'm like, okay, well, you're telling me not to vote for you. I'm more than happy to accommodate that. And so it's been a weird evolution where, and now we're overtly seeing on the conservative right, there are these influencers that quite literally made their name on free speech and anti-censorship that are calling for the censorship of speech that they don't agree with. And, you know, I don't necessarily want to get into like the Middle East stuff too much, but it has been very shocking to me to see the reactions of like Dave Rubin, Ben Shapiro, people like that on the conservative right who are calling for the censorship and banning of people based on a political disagreement because they very literally made their name on doing the opposite. And so I think we're in actually a very precarious position where you have both the right and the left who neither side really seems to support free speech. And I'm just kind of over here in the middle saying, I think you're all crazy, but can we please talk about socialism? Because this is actually a really important problem that's going to impact our
That's the brilliance of this is why I'm such a big fan of your work, because I too feel that people are being and not by accident, people are being divided and then divided again and then divided again by issues that will not matter if we lose freedom, if our country becomes a communist, socialist, globalist based country and our sovereignty is ceded. As you know, and I know, there are plenty of plans of global governance that are actually real and out there. And I believe that the Biden regime and many of the people involved in there, especially the public-private partnership of the multinationals, the Finks, the Gates, all these people, they're more globalists now. But even though they say that they're Democrats, that's not really the end goal there for these, the ones that go to Davos and Bilderberg and them. They have a different vision. And if we don't start to focus on where we do agree and continue to divide and divide and divide, well, we have no shot as far as I'm concerned, because that is how far they've gotten. And your work has really put that out there. And that does bother me, because I'm a big tent person. I always was. And I don't even know where I fit. I feel like not only is there a uniparty, but I don't feel like any one of these people, these selected officials, have any power at this point. The lobbyists have power, the multinational corporations and their what I call the international banking cartel. And honestly, this globalist elite, and they're in America and they're outside of America, and they have a big problem just with America existing on the chessboard. And if we don't start to understand how they've infiltrated here, we honestly, 2024 may be the turn that it, you know, really ends the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and all these things as we know them. So let's go to on the other side. So are you seeing a shift? Because you watch both. This is part of what you do. Are you seeing a shift on the left away? Because what I have noticed when you're bringing up the conservatives, especially these ones that want to shut down speech, because my take on Israel is totally different than any of them. I honestly think it's about the land and that fighting against Palestinians or Israelis or Jewish or Muslim. I think it's a total distraction. I think it's about that land and the people, the globalist billionaire oligarchy that want that particular land for the Eurasian continent. It's a whole different story, but we have the left too. And the big thing on the left are what's happened on college campuses. But this has been your job, is to say this has been happening, and you have been for a very long time. What's also disturbing is the Jewish left that has a lot of power, okay, has been funding these college campuses. Suddenly they all are saying, wow, you know, look at them. They're turning against us. No. These same people fueled Black Lives Matter, fueled the movement on the campuses, and now they're taking their money out. And it's like, well, what didn't they get before? So what's your take on the left and also the campuses and the money and this kind of realization that's been in front of your face the whole time?
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there. And I think I want to start off just by making a distinction between the WEF and the globalists and the socialists who I track, who there is some overlapping goals between the two groups, but these two groups do not get along. And I think a lot of people conflate these two groups. So you have the WEF and the Malthusians, the Klaus Schwabs, the Bill Gateses. And I'm not trying to diminish that problem. It's just not something that I focus on. I'm glad people like you are focusing on it so I can focus on other things.
Right.
And then over here, we have what I track, which are the radical revolutionary socialists that are pushing agendas in the United States, like critical race theory, like gender ideology. They're the ones that are the academics that have taken over the universities. They're the ones that are pushing all this crazy stuff into K-12 education.
Yeah.
And again, it's not to say there's not some overlap between those groups and those and their goals, but these two groups do not get along at all. The radical revolutionary socialists hate the WEF, and I think we're going to see like an epic showdown between those groups. But I do think it's important to distinguish, because a lot of people conflate the two, and they're not the same.
Exactly.
What I've seen is, it's funny you said abolish the Constitution earlier. I literally just the other day on Socialism Saturday, which is a stream I do on my YouTube channel every Saturday at 6 p.m.
Awesome.
We watched a 6-hour socialism conference that happened in Atlanta, Georgia last year. They literally talked about abolishing the Constitution.
Right.
In overt terms. And so that is something they're trying to do. And what we see from the groups that I track is these are the ones that are really fueling a lot of like the Black Lives Matter stuff in terms of like they fueled the protests in 2020. They were involved in Black Lives Matter before most of us even knew what it was and all that stuff. But to get to your point about the funding in the universities, so a lot of people ask me like, who is the leader, the quote unquote leader of the socialists? And I have to say, I have to explain to people, there's no one leader. It is a decentralized network of academics, of intellectuals, of authors, but they're mostly stationed in the elite universities in the country. And I've been screaming about this for years. I mean, one of the things I do on Socialism Saturday is I go onto these university websites and I find these small little centers that exist in universities that like three people work at, but they're funding all of these talks. I can go onto the University of Pennsylvania website right now and show you talks from abolish the family socialists that are actively campaigning to abolish the biological nuclear family that work at the University of Pennsylvania. Right. They have entire centers dedicated to this stuff. And so I've been screaming about this stuff for years and funding for the universities and things like that. And you're right that it was very alarming to me that as soon as this stuff started in the Middle East, then all of a sudden these big Jewish donors decided to pull all their money out. And I was like, where were you?
Right.
Like you're telling me that's all that was required. Where were you? Because the you have been funding the people who are driving these protests on college campuses. And the thing that people really need to understand, and I actually have a clip that proves this that I got from a socialism presentation, is that the students protesting on college campuses, for the most part, don't actually care about Palestine. The Palestinian liberation movement has existed forever. I came from the left. I understood the Palestinian liberation stuff. It has existed for a very long time. Maybe onesies and twosies that are protesting have actively been involved with it the whole time. But for the most part, what leftists do is they hijack issues to use them for their own purposes. So what they're doing is that the academics, the intellectuals on college campuses have hijacked this issue. They pushed it down to their students. By the way, I think that students who are getting blacklisted on Wall Street, I think they're victims in all of this. They've been indoctrinated into a cult since they were kids. Like, when you're indoctrinated into a cult, I give you a little bit of slack, but that's who we're seeing protest on college campuses. And it's because the social justice movement hijacked the Liberate Palestine issue. And I actually have Angela Davis, who is a famous communist activist, on video saying that they hijacked the Palestinian liberation issue specifically to cause disruption, because causing disruption is one of the ways that they're trying to destabilize our system so they can attack capitalism, so they can usher in their Marxist utopia. And so it was rather shocking to me to find out that all of these billionaires were perfectly fine funding all of this stuff in the first place. And then the minute that it bites them in the backside, they're like, oh, now we're pulling our billions of dollars. Well, where were you years ago?
Yeah. I mean, for decades, but especially between Black Lives Matter and the Women's March and the BDS and the abortion, and everything that's happened on campus was funded by these people. Second, yeah. they see the marches around the country on campuses about Israel and Palestine. Now they realize that they've been funding this for decades, let alone the last 6 years, all out of it's unbelievable to me. And it's very hypocritical in the end anyway. But
well, I want to add one more thing onto that, because I don't know if you know this about me. I actually worked in higher education for about 10 years. I actually worked in the fundraising office at Dartmouth. So I know elite fundraising. I worked for,
really, really know it. Yeah.
Like really, really elite fundraising. And so one of the things that I think is going to happen is that, so the reason these donors are pulling their donations from the universities is they're trying to make someone resign. They're trying to gain power over the situation. Now, are they going to stop the protests? No, but maybe they can get the president to resign. Maybe they can get some professors they don't like to resign, stuff like that. Once that happens, guess what's going to happen? The money's going back. Because they never cared about the indoctrination in the first place. As soon as they get what they want, whatever their demand is, they're going to start funding it all again. And so it's like, you know, they are very literally feeding the engine of their own demise. And I still don't think they actually realize what's happening.
No, and I think it is about what you're saying. They give money. A lot of these people, I come from that world as well, and a lot of people give this kind of money. They want either their legacy, their children to get in, their grandchildren to get in. They want a building named after them if they're that wealthy. A lot of it is about vanity and ego. And, you know, like you and I have lived through this, and a lot of people have as well, where, you know, you go through life and then you think, well, I got into this great school and now this school's a part of my life. It was like 12 years ago I started answering the phone from NYU and telling them, no, you owe me money. it's not the way it works. But again, I also want people to understand, because I did not know that you were on the fundraising side. These universities' endowments are billions of dollars. They do not need to charge what they are charging. The entire, and it was used a lot for the campaign and for Joe Biden and all them and all, the whole squad about, you know, student loan and all that. The whole student loan thing is a total fraud, because they have enough money that they can make their tuition reasonable. They don't. And then the loan thing starts. So why don't people understand that these universities are actually giant, basically corporations that have more money than Wall Street?
But this is an argument I've been making for years. Like I get a lot of crap because I did my PhD at a for-profit college, but like, I'll tell you what, because I worked in higher education, I knew the amount of wasteful spending that took place. The for-profit colleges in higher education are actually the best run colleges and universities in the country. And it's actually funny, because a lot of the schools that are nonprofits, the more quote unquote credible schools, they actually take their cues from the for-profit colleges when they're trying to optimize or reduce costs or any of these things. That's how well run these are, because they pay attention to the wasteful spending. They want to create efficiencies. They really do much better job of serving their audiences. Colleges and universities, the traditional ones, and again, I've worked and done consulting with some of the most elite colleges in the country. They are some of the worst run institutions you will ever run into in your life. And the reason the tuition is so high is because right about like in the mid aughts into like the 2010s, a lot of university campuses were expanding and like doing all this construction and building these luxury style like apartment buildings and all this stuff. Well, they didn't fund that out of their endowment. They funded it by taking on debt. And that debt was then passed on to students in the form of tuition. And you can go back. There are all sorts of articles on Inside Higher Ed about this when it happened. And so that's why the costs are so high, because they funded all of this construction to make these luxury spa-like campuses, and they funded it all from debt because they thought it was going to be cheaper to fund that than to spend their own money doing it. And then they pass the cost right on to the consumer. And in the midst of all of this, these academics who have been making their long march through the institution for decades and decades and decades just got completely entrenched in the academic leadership of the institution. And they started changing how the courses are run, the materials taught in the courses. And so although a lot of this stuff has definitely trickled into the K-12 schools, and I definitely hope we get a point to touch on that.
Yeah.
Ground zero for leftist indoctrination is the colleges and universities. And there are very few colleges and universities in the country that are not teaching this material to students in every single course as required courses when they come in as their freshmen, to include, by the way, the elite military academies. There are required courses at West Point, at the Naval Academy, at the Air Force Academy that you have to take when you are a freshman in those schools that include equity, diversity, all this stuff that is trickled down from the elite colleges and universities. So how it works is students get a taste of this stuff all throughout K through 12 schools, and we can go more into that. But yeah, once they get to college, college is where all of these ideas get cemented in their ideology, because they're reinforced in every single class these students take.
Yeah, it's scary. You know, I just want to say, I went to school and loans. It took me 22 years to pay off my NYU loans, and I paid them off just before 2019. And I'll tell you right now, I got calls right when Joe Biden was going in and campaigning on it. Did I need help? And I went through the whole thing, and then, oh, you just paid it off right before the COVID, like an idiot. And had I not, and I said to the lady, I go, well, what if I deferred? And I had all this debt. They were like, well, then you would qualify. And this is such an upside down thinking situation. But again, then when I look into it further, I think, well, you know, what you just said, people have to understand, they weren't using their endowments for students to get you into the school. They were using them for whatever else that they were doing. That it had nothing to do with tuition and stuff. And I will say, NYU is the third largest landowner in New York City. And can you imagine how expensive the property that they own alone is? And that's a lot of schools, you know?
Well, and I'll tell you, NYU specifically, I actually have a presentation pulled up on my desktop right now for one of those little centers in NYU.
Oh, yeah.
Where they funding all of this. NYU is one of the, they're not one of the absolute worst. Columbia is actually way worse than NYU, but NYU is in on all of this stuff too.
Yeah. And also what's scary is because I studied screenwriting there and journalism, and both of those majors there now, film and journalism, are completely woke. And you can't even get in there now unless your essay is somewhat down that track.
You know what? So funny story. We actually, one of the most traumatizing things we've ever watched on my channel was a film project. I swear I'm not making this up.
I know.
It was out of the film department at NYU, where a bunch of film students went and got, they like went to an old age home or something, and they got all these elderly senior citizens to come make a student movie with them. And this movie was all about senior citizens playing with gender and gender roles. And it was like specific. I swear to God, we were like, they kidnapped senior citizens to indoctrinate them. It was like a bad student film. It was like one of those where they're trying to be.
Well, they're
artsy.
Not teaching talent anymore. They're teaching people to put out propaganda. And it's a very different. It's so sad. And also, you know, even still, when you graduated from one of those programs, you'd go into different things. Like you try to be a fellow or get your film into Sundance. So I go on, I'm just checking it out. I'm looking at like Sundance and some other festivals that used to be the way to go in the 90s if you wanted to be successful. And they're all like, every category is something to do with climate or gender or whatever. If you're not making a movie about one of those things, you are not moving forward in the filmmaking business at all right now. And that's another thing. Now, I do want to get into K through 12, because, well, last thing I want to ask you, if you had a child right now, because this is a problem right now, so people with children that are awake, that see what's going on, that are clear about it. Their children are, you know, 15, 16. I have had friends who have sent me their college application essays where it's like 15 genders, all of this. The essay part is all about like feelings and wokeness and all of that for the great schools, but also for crappy schools. I have a lot of friends whose kids and people that watch me send me emails that kids say, well, why would I even apply? I'm a white male kid. I'm not going to get in. Like, they're just not. And they're like, all these white kids feel like, well, why would I even apply to the school I want to go to? They're going to reject me anyway, because I'm not woke and I don't fit a box. At this point, what is your feeling about sending a child to these universities?
I wouldn't send my child to K through 12 public school, let alone a college or university. I mean, that's the God's honest truth. Like, and I say that as someone, I have a literal PhD. I've done as much schooling as like a person can do. Right. I would never send my kids to school or to university. And if they really insisted on going to college because they wanted the college experience, I can kind of actually understand that. But there would be long talks about like, here is what you need to expect going into college, because if you're insistent upon doing this, I'm going to inoculate you to this ideology to make sure you actually, you can go and have fun and drink and do whatever college kids do. Like, it's a rite of passage, whatever, but don't buy into what these people are going to teach you, because it's going to be nonsense.
Yeah, it's terrible. And luckily there are some parents that do that, but just not enough, because people are shocked when their kids come home. I've had enough emails from parents saying I've lost my child. Now let's get through to K through 12. We have a giant problem there, and the worst part of it all, and let me tell you something, I'm going to put a link below to her shows. They are so eye-opening, and God bless you, because nobody, I don't see anyone else doing this level of work. But what is the root of what is happening in our K through 12 schools? Is it coming out of the Department of Education? Is it coming out of UNESCO? What is it coming out of this socialist, you know, blob of the universities? Can you kind of paint a picture of what is happening to our children in that realm?
Yeah.
Hey guys, thank you for watching the show. I just want to remind you yet again that we really need to be very cautious of what is going on with the economy, both here and internationally. Most of us know that the BRICS nations are looking for a gold-backed currency to dethrone the dollar being the world reserve currency. They have an event coming up on August 22nd. The BRICS nations are all going. There are also 13 other nations that would like to join the BRICS nations. And this is not something to not pay attention to. We have to make sure that you protect your savings. And that is why I have chosen Beverly Hills Precious Metals. That is where I have gotten my gold and silver. I leave it in a depository. I know it's there. I've replaced it with my savings. I've put there to make sure that I weather the storm no matter what. Be it the central bank digital currency, the BRICS nations, the dollar goes into collapse, whatever may happen. I know 401k, IRA, backed by gold, as well as having my savings, at least an amount of my savings in gold, in the depository or sent to you at home, is the best way to make sure you maintain peace of mind and make sure that your savings and everything that you've earned is safe no matter what comes. We will get through this. All is not lost. America will return to greatness as it always has been. But between now and then, we have to be very smart and very cognizant of what's going on. So please go to Mel K. Gold, or go to the MelKShow.com partners page and go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals. And my friend Andrew will take care of you. He's got a great team. Gold is the way to go right now. And I know that no matter what, I'm safe. So please do that for yourselves. We really care about you here. You're more like family and friends. And I hear from all of you a lot. So I just want to make sure that you guys are doing something proactive to be prepared. All will be well, but take care of yourself now. Being prepared is always a good thing.
So it goes back to the long march through the institution. So what happened is in the 50s, after World War II, the Frankfurt School, which is the home of critical theory, the home of Marx and all this stuff, they came to the United States and they set up shop at Columbia University. Columbia University is ground zero for all of this stuff. And from there, they started their long march through the institutions, which means they basically got themselves into high-level academic positions in colleges and universities that had tenure that were basically impossible to get fired from. Now, they do this for decades. They're doing it quietly for decades. What do you get when you take over the colleges and universities? You get the schools of education. The schools of education are where public school teachers are trained to be teachers. And so it's hard to kind of put a specific time frame on it, but I think they concluded their long march through the institutions around 2008, 2009, 2010, which is not to say they don't always try to gain power, but like they've got it solidified. They own the universities now. And when you own the university, you own how teachers are trained. I think that we have seen generations of teachers that have been trained in critical theory without realizing it. And critical theory means Marxism since the 70s coming into public schools. And so it starts with a couple trickles because they didn't take over all the schools at once, but then they started taking over more and more and more and more and more. And so we're now to the point where I believe that not only is almost every single public school educator indoctrinated into this ideology, either through the colleges and universities or through the professional development programs that they've had to do to maintain their teacher licensure. Not only have they been indoctrinated, but they were trained by people who were indoctrinated. So we're like two or three generations out of like of the takeover of the colleges of education. So what happens when that happens? Well, you have all this far left ideology trickling from the universities into every subject into K through 12 schools. They started in high school, then they went down to middle school. And now we are seeing in almost every single school district, even in red cities, red states, that they are starting to teach these ideas to kids when they are 5 years old in kindergarten. And how they do it is it's a drip, right? It's not like they come out and they go to kindergartners, we're going to have our Black Lives Matter curriculum now. Although sometimes they literally do that. They do whole Black Lives Matter weeks. But usually what actually happens is much more subtle than that, is they start teaching ideas around equity and collectivism and fairness and social justice and activism. And they teach it in books. They teach it in other curriculum. This is taught in English classes, history classes, art classes, science classes, math classes. It's taught in literally every subject, just drip, 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 drip. And it builds on itself. So like when you're learning a little bit about something in the context of like a larger area of study, you don't notice it. Right? It just kind of like slides right in there. And then you learn a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And that's why we're seeing by the time these kids get to high school, and I'm quoting data from school districts themselves, in places like Burlington, Vermont, you have 40% of kids by the time they hit high school identifying as genderqueer or gender non-binary. These words didn't exist 10 years ago. And now we have 40% of kids in some of these school districts identifying as these things. That's because they've been fed this ideology since kindergarten.
And you know what's interesting about what you're saying? Because you did go all the way through your PhD. I have a sister who stayed in university. She's a doctor, but as long as she could have, because then after that, then she became, you know, worked on the campus as a doing research. So you can stay there forever if you'd like. But the scary thing, too, is that what you're talking about is the people that are in the education departments then go on to teach in the universities, then go on to have PhDs and master's degrees and advanced degrees in education, then go out and then they're running the curriculum. So if you have one or two teachers that are like, well, this isn't what I want, this isn't helping the kids, and we're not preparing them for life, we're not preparing them for high school, it doesn't matter because they have to go by that curriculum. And then people wondered what happened to the school boards and all of this stuff. So it's been a long game here. But at the same time, you know, you brought up before Angela Davis, and you're bringing up a time frame that I think really matters. And I know that you went kind of undercover and saw Bill Ayers speak at one of the big socialism conferences. A lot of people do not know about the Weather Underground. They do not know about the movement in that period of time. And I think that a lot of those people ended up being heroes of the left, but not really of the left knowing it. They ended it up. So I think I look at that group, and I'm talking about the ones that brought Barack Obama on the scene, because we know that he had dinner with Michelle, with Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers on Sunday nights for years. It's in his own book. A lot of people think that Bill Ayers wrote his first autobiography, but he's close, you know, he's close with Franklin Marshall Davis was his mentor. So is that group of people that then they're associated obviously with the Clintons and the Obamas and all that? Are they still involved in this, or have they passed on the torch?
Oh, no. I mean, at that socialism conference that I went to, I heard that Bill Ayers was there. I don't know that I actually saw him, but I did see Angela Davis there. Oh, Angela Davis is like the patron saint of these people. And when I say the socialism conference, the conference is literally called the Socialism Conference. This is not like a fun name that I'm doing or anything. Literally what it's called. And this is like home, and it's put on by Haymarket Books, which is one of the biggest socialist book publishers. Haymarket Books came out of the International Socialist Organization, I forget exactly the name of the group, because basically it was like the biggest socialist group that existed. And then they had a Me Too scandal and they had to disband, but Haymarket Books basically took over where they left off. And so that's our International Socialist Organization today. They put on the socialism conference where all the intellectuals, all the elites come to this. And Angela Davis is their patron saint. Angela Davis is all over their YouTube channel. She is one of their star authors. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right that if there's like one, if I have to identify like leaders in the socialist movement, it is people like Angela Davis that have been around forever. and published a lot of books. But what I would say is, like, the people that socialists consider to be rock stars are the people publishing books. That's who their heroes are, the publishers of the books, the people teaching the classes, because one of the ways that these people have taken over every part of our society is they are constantly pushing their ideas out there. There are so many socialist-specific book publishers, it would make your head spin. These are the people that are publishing books. And I'll tell you what, too, like, even some of the bigger publishing houses, like in New York, a lot of them are far left now too. Like, I can go on to, like, and I wrote a book with Penguin Random House. So I'm not like, you know, like, I can go on to Penguin Random House's website and identify socialists, like, in their ranks as well. So it's not even just these little independent publishers. These people through publishing have infiltrated some of the biggest publishing houses in the world as well. And so, but I want to go back to what you were saying too about Obama, like coming out of that. So the Socialism Conference is in Chicago. Haymarket Books. Wow. Is in Chicago. All of these people are connected. You have the Pritzker family in Chicago. J.B. Pritzker is the governor of Illinois. The Pritzker family has funded gender ideology in schools.
Right.
You know, I mean, so, like, you're absolutely right that, like, all of these people are connected to each other. And it's not to say they all talk and they're all, like, making plans, because this is a decentralized movement. There
on
is
purpose.
No
one but that's
leader.
The on genius purpose. Of it, right?
Yeah,
is that it exactly. is decentralized.
Yeah, exactly.
That's important to understand, because people do look for it. It's funny that you say that. I just finished a book and I'm dealing with the agent and all this. And we're laughing because he's like, okay, well, you didn't hit on this in the book and you didn't hit on that on the book. And, well, maybe there's a chance for Simon and Schuster or this and that, because I didn't, because it's not a partisan book. It's not about any of this stuff. So he's like, oh, you know, maybe this, maybe that. And it's like, I didn't realize how that even the big ones, that they are very, very, they are way, way to the left or whatever they think is the left, and that there is really no room for dissenting opinions at the very top. This is what's going on everywhere. But it's because of what you said. A lot of these people are coming out of these elite universities with these degrees. They get the good jobs and then they work their way up. And when they get there, then they change everything that's going on. Now, I want to jump to
something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. So I want to add on to what you were saying about the K-12 schools, though, too, because you were talking about, like, the curriculum and them taking over the curriculum. And that's all very, very true. But the other thing that has happened with the teacher training programs getting taken over is who becomes the administrators in schools? Well, the former teachers become the administrators in the schools, right? And so not only have they taken over the curriculum, one thing that people don't pay attention to at all is they've taken over the policy within the schools. So who makes policy in the schools? The principals, the assistant principals, the directors of diversity, equity, and inclusion. On almost every single school district in the country, they have directors of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Equity means Marxism. And so these are the people that are writing the policies that the teachers in the schools have to abide to. And I was talking with a teacher the other day who's not on the left, thinks all this stuff is crazy. And he told me, he said, Carlin, I had a meeting with a student and their parent where the student thinks they're trans. The student was using different names and pronouns than their birth name and pronouns. The parent said, don't use the names and pronouns the student is telling you to use, because I'm the parent and I'm going to tell you what to call my kid. And the school policy did not allow the teacher to listen to the parent. The school, the teacher, even though he agreed with the parent intellectually, he had to call the student the names and pronouns the student wanted because of the school policy. The school policy piece is something that so many people have overlooked in the course of all of this. And, like, because they're writing policies that you never even hear about. And I'll tell you what, too, those directors of diversity, equity, and inclusion, guess what one of the things they're in charge of is? Teacher professional development. So you're having trainings and presentations filtering through these equity offices that are reinforcing woke ideology. This is one of the reasons that on my channel, and we're going to do a big one in a couple of weeks, we infiltrate teacher training programs. Right. Because if you go into the teacher training programs, you know what's coming next in the schools.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people that are my age and older think back to our teachers and wonder, like, well, there's probably only a few, but you're really explaining it on a bigger scale. Now, before we move on to capitalism and white supremacy, let's talk. I just wanted to ask one thing that just popped into my mind while you were saying that. I'm a little older than you, but people older than me certainly have this. When we were growing up, we had all different kinds of things, like shop, music, drama, home ec, physical education, all this stuff seems to have been taken out of school. Everything that could foster your individuality, your creativity, your, you know, your ingenuity, or thinking outside of the box, has that been done on purpose? Is that part of this, that that they no longer allow for anyone to veer out into the creative or imagination? Because a part of this whole thing, and I do go at it from the World Economic Forum side, as opposed to the side that you really look at it, but there is an idea that in the future, they won't need people to be creative, that it's all going to be AI and all of that. That's a different thing. But what about this part of getting rid of all of those kind of alternate pathways of learning in schools?
You know, it's an interesting question. I don't think it's as so I wouldn't say that I've seen like a mass movement in terms of like getting art out of schools and getting all these things out of schools. I mean, there's certainly some schools that have done it. I'm not saying that, but it's not part of like a concerted effort from these people that I know of. In fact, these people think that when we're going to usher in the Marxist utopia, they're going to have all this time to be artists and creative. So they're actually very like much in favor of the arts, at least with, and they're actually very leery of AI. They're going to use AI to their benefit, don't get me wrong, but they're kind of like leery of it. They don't really like it. So it's kind of, it's a weird relationship they have with it. But I would say that, you know, it's a thing where they do want to do is push kids into the normal colleges and universities, not into the trade schools, because they want them to be further indoctrinated. This is why like Joe Biden is like, we're going to make the first 2 years of college free or whatever through community colleges. Because they want to push them into that ecosystem. So I think it's probably more about that.
I get it. Very interesting, too, about that. Now, the other thing is that you write a lot about, and you really have opened my eyes a lot about decoding these words. And most people know. So a big article came out this past week, Real Clear Politics, or Real Clear Investigations, one of them. And it was all these statistics about crime, black on white, white on white, black on black, all of this. The amount of white on white crime or white on black crime is so minuscule compared to the opposite. And all of these crime statistics are all of that. Yet we are told that the biggest danger in America is white supremacists, white males, and it's constantly beat into us that the MAGA white Christian nationalists, which is a whole nother thing, but so is this white, can you explain what they mean when they are going after white supremacy? Because people are thinking, well, where are these white supremacists? And it's not what they're not saying what they mean. And you've been the person that opened my eyes. And now when I see it, I say, that's not what they're talking about. So yeah, can you explain this push that from all the way from Obama, Biden, whoever's running that show, to the neighbor on the street thinks there's a white supremacist problem in America?
Yeah. So this is going to sound crazy for people who are hearing this for the first time. And I want to acknowledge that because it took me a long time to understand this. But just to give people who might be new to me context, I have watched literally thousands of hours of their trainings over the last 3 years. I've watched more of their trainings and their real world application of this stuff than anyone else on the planet that I know of. And if you think you know someone who's watched more than me, let me know who they are, because I'd like to talk to them.
All right. Exactly.
But like, so when the left says whiteness, white supremacy, things like that, they don't mean skin color. They mean capitalism. They mean the system that drives our entire society. So you think back to in 2020, where the African American History Museum in Washington, D.C. had this display about white supremacy culture. Some of the things on that display were things like individualism, right, meritocracy, telling time, you know, working hard. Those are not elements that are related to someone's skin color. Those are all elements that they believe hold up the capitalist society, because capitalism cannot exist in a place without individualism and meritocracy. These people quite literally believe that capitalism, which they define as private property, so it doesn't matter what the real definition of capitalism is, or crony capitalism, or corrupt. We need to put that issue to the side for the second, because we're trying to understand what they mean. They define capitalism as the ownership of private property. So when they say things like whiteness, white supremacy, what they're referring to is they believe capitalism created slavery because you're talking about private property ownership of individuals, of human beings. That private property ownership of individuals led to systemic racism. That systemic racism was fueled by capitalism. The only way we get rid of systemic racism is by bringing in equity, which means that we are eliminating all disparity in outcome, which is literally the goal of Marxism. So I understand that that's a lot, even just right then. But I like the reason that they equate whiteness with capitalism is because they believe capitalism created slavery, which created systemic racism. And they're using language to try to get people to fight with each other and to think right. that it's about race. The left loves nothing more than when the right is complaining about race this and race that and race the other thing, because then they turn it around and they use it against you. And all the while, they're advancing this idea that we have to get rid of systemic racism in this country. We have to get rid of systemic racism. Well, what do they mean by systemic racism? They literally mean capitalism.
Yeah. And I mean, you taught me that and now I can't unsee it. I see it everywhere, yeah. All the time. And it's really important for people to really understand this. And I'm going to put all of her links below. She gets attacked a lot by the socialist people because they are, like she said, they're a decentralized movement, but they are huge. And people out there have to wake up and start to see this language the way she's gone out of her way to define it in a way that now I can't not see it. So I see Barack Obama, who I believe is a part of this globalist group, but also an avowed, as he said in the past, Marxist and communist. That is my take on his history. I have friends who've written books on him. That is what I believe, that he agrees with this movement away from capitalism. So he gets on stage at the Obama Center, but the $300 million Obama Center, by the way, and he gets on stage there last week and he says, you know, capitalism doesn't work. We got to change to something called inclusive capitalism. And my head starts beeping.
Did he really say that?
Yes. I played it on my show. And my head starts beeping. And I recall that the Pope and Linda Rothschild about 2 years ago had an event at the Vatican where they introduced inclusive capitalism. And it was everything. It was socialism. It was communism. And so what do you make of that? That Obama just announced this and is not hiding it in a big meeting last week. That was one of the first that have been publicized from the Obama Center.
I mean, it fits into the four goals of the woke left purposely. And I'm shocked that he used that language, but I'm not shocked at the same time, because that's the place where he comes out of. Again, Chicago, that whole activist, the organizer seen in Chicago, they're all socialists. Like the Chicago school board is run by socialists. Like, I mean, it, and they're not shy about it. They call themselves socialists. I have them on tape calling themselves socialists. Right. And so the four goals of the woke left are always the same. Gain as much power as possible, destabilize the system, attack capitalism, usher in their Marxist utopia. When Barack Obama got elected president, that is quite literally what I think was the point where they moved from talking about racism as an individual thing of white people believing they're better than black people to racism being structural racism or systemic racism. That was the time frame that it happened, because they had completed their goal of gaining power. They literally had the most powerful position in the world with Barack Obama as the president. They didn't need to gain any power, right? From there, they moved into destabilizing the system, which is causing problems. You saw Occupy Wall Street come up. You saw equity got pushed majorly into the school district starting in 2008, 2009, 2010 as a formal department. You saw the New York Times, the Washington Post starting to write about racism this, racism that, racism everywhere. You saw the 1619 Project. You saw these uprisings starting to happen on college campuses. Destabilization just means they cause problems that are going to impact the lives of normal people. What do they do after they cause the problems? They come in and they say, as Barack Obama did, capitalism is the cause of all these problems. Every problem we have, from inequity to systemic racism to climate change is absolutely something they're going to use. All of these things are caused by capitalism. So do you know what we need to do? We need to try socialism. We need to try Marxism. I literally just posted a clip on my Twitter earlier today of a socialist literally saying that. And so that's what that means. When he says inclusive capitalism, what he means is a managed capitalism, not free market capitalism,
right,
which is going to be socialism. Like when the government manages the means of production, that's socialism.
I know. I saw it and I thought of you immediately. I think that's when I sent you a message being like, you got to come on because this is crazy talk. I mean, they're not even hiding it. And so here's the other thing too, that I want to make you to help illuminate the truth here about this is, capitalism to them includes all private property, including your children, including you, not to own small businesses, not to own any land, not to own or control your children or their lives or their destinies. It includes everything. So this would be the Marxist for anyone that was forced in college, like I was, to read the Communist Manifesto or any of that. This is the utopia that they believe that all of that would bring, that has universal basic income. And like you said, everyone can do whatever they want. They'll have plenty of time to be creative in some way. But at the end of the day, who runs this utopia they're talking about? If everyone else is now in this non-capitalistic universal basic income, probably 15-minute city situation, who's running this?
You know, it's funny that you ask that, because every once in a while we'll like stream snipe socialist presentations as they're live, and we go into their chats and we try to ask them questions to get them to say the quiet part out loud. And so I actually asked a socialist this like several months ago, and I have the whole thing on video on my channel somewhere. I said, who gets to make the decisions about like what people need, what jobs they had, who makes the decisions? And the answer is always the same: the community. That's all they say is the community. And what that means is, like, so you have to think about in terms of like, think about 1984 is like the best example I have to use. So in 1984, you had Winston, who was it? He was a member of the party. He was a comrade, but he was not a high ranking member of the party. So he's kind of like a normal worker that got assigned his job, and he goes in every day and does it. And if he doesn't go to work, he doesn't eat and all this stuff. The party is led by the inner party. Okay. Winston's in the outer party. The inner party are the ones that make all the decisions. They're the ones that get the better food. They're the ones that get to turn off the Big Brother TV. They know what's going on. They see the bigger picture. They're the ones making the decision. And then you have the proletariat on the outside who aren't involved in any of this and are just suffering alongside like each other in the socialist utopia. That's how you have to think of it, is when socialists often will say that they're anarchists, they want to get rid of the government. They don't want to get rid of the government. No. What they want to is get rid of the capitalist government, the government as we know it, the government as it currently stands, and they want to replace it with a Marxist government that they think they're going to be the ones in control of it.
Right.
So I like Socialism Saturday this past weekend, I have them on tape saying, we want to abolish the Supreme Court. We want to abolish the Constitution. We want to abolish the capitalist government. And I'll tell you what, too. So you went through all the things private property means. People don't think about this. It means your house. It means your business. It means your children. It also means your individual rights. They consider your individual rights to be a form of private property that they need to abolish in order to usher in collectivism.
It is so amazing to me. And again, when you look at the Chinese Communist Party and then you see these people, because I have to say, I pulled out a lot of quotes when I was writing my book, of from Rockefeller to Gates to Larry Fink to Bezos to obviously Henry Kissinger and all these people talking about how great the CCP runs society. These people do not hide that. Klaus Schwab says, you know, if we're going to run society, the best model is basically the communist Chinese model, that works, which is basically what they're saying. But what they're not saying, and what the AOCs of the world and the Democrat Socialists of America, they don't define who the leaders are, and that at the end of the day, those will still be billionaire oligarchs that are aligned globally and are still, their lives will not change. It's so shocking to me that these people talk and then, you know, they'll say, yeah, the community. Well, which community? The same community that right now, you know, meets in penthouses in Manhattan and talks about the useless eaters and you know, those poor people in foreign places that shouldn't have even been born, those poor things. I mean, it's still going to be an elitist class that controls everything, even if they got what they wanted.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think in the socialist utopia that the radical revolutionary socialists want to create, I don't think there is going to be a billionaire class, because I mean, they've talked about getting rid of all money entirely, to be honest. They want to completely undo the system. So if private business doesn't exist, there's no profit motive. So there's not going to be a billionaire class, but what they are going to have is, again, the things that the inner party had. They're going to have better food, they're going to have more food, they're going to have better places to live, they're going to be famous, they're going to be on TV, like reading the news and stuff like that. They're the ones that are going to be writing the propaganda talking points. So it's like, there is always going to be a ruling class, no matter how many times these people say they want to smash the state, get rid of the state. They don't really. They want to smash the capitalist state. That's what it is.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I always say to people that what they are planning, at least from my work, looking all the way at all of the different tentacles that are connected to the WEF and UN and all of them, all the way up to the Bank of International Settlements, everything that they write about global governance sounds exactly to me like the movie Hunger Games. And that's, you know, where, you know, there's wards and we'll take care of all the wards, but we'll live here in Pan Am and we'll do our thing. And we'll pick a couple of your children to kill every year. So you stay in the game. And it's really, really dangerous. So I love having you on. Before you go, you have been out there, and I agree with you. First of all, I think the left and right, both of their platforms right now going into 2024 are terrible. They're both awful for this country. They're not articulating, you know, what I think is universally matters to most of the majority of sane people looking at what is happening to our country. I call the controlled demolition of America. They're not really addressing the internal issues we have, and they're really skirting around them. As much as they're trying to silence Donald Trump, he's doing the best he can, but he's on Truth Social, you know, unless you're listening to him or following him or anything, you're not hearing that. And then on the left, you know, they're really silencing RFK Jr. I haven't seen anything from him since he said he was independent. So going into the 2024 year, really, really a weird time. What are your thoughts on this year ahead and what you see and what you would say to people out there from your point of view we should be focusing on? Because you look at it very differently. And I think the stakes and danger of which you point out is far more dangerous than almost anything anyone is talking about in terms of what needs to be done.
Yeah, I don't think 2024 is going to be a good year, man. And I'm going to be honest. I called when there was no red wave in the 2022 midterms. I called that 6 months prior that there was going to be no red wave in the midterms. I called what happened in 2023, which was abortion was going to sink the Republican jet again. I think that 2024 is going to be a bad year, but I also think so what I think is going to happen is there's going to be some sort of leftist caused big crisis or series of riots that's going to take place in the summer of 2024 again. They're going to roll out the 2020 treatment. They've been waiting to for a while, by the way. Right. And I think that it might be in Florida, if I'm honest about it. They're actually gearing up for some sort of confrontation in Florida. They've been spinning each other up around Florida. I have them on tape talking about, like, the minute a teacher gets fired in Florida, they're going to start raising hell. They're like, people are planning on flying in to do protests. So I think it's going to be in Florida, whatever is going to get teed off, because they're really, like, they're planning for that. And they're going to use that to try to cause crisis, cause catastrophe. They're going to blame that catastrophe on, you know, the evil white supremacists, which by white supremacists, they mean capitalists. They don't actually mean the right wing. Right. And I think they're going to, I think the way things are going, especially on the right, because there's so much infighting on the right and there's so much alienating people that could have voted for the right that just will never vote for the right now. I mean, we even look at the election of, like, Javier Milei in Argentina last night, which was really exciting for libertarians because Javier is a libertarian.
Right.
And I got to tell you, well, there are a lot of conservative influencers that pissed off a lot of the libertarians because they refused to say he was a libertarian.
Oh, really? Wow. Oh, yeah. I didn't see that. Oh, yeah. He's so clearly a libertarian. I love the libertarians. I have to tell you, I do a lot of shows with libertarians. And I love Ron Paul, by the way. But I do want to say, I think that you're absolutely right. I don't think the right at all gets what's going on. I wrote, like, and you can't really write anything. I call them Twitter celebrities. The right influencers that have 500,000 or more, they are not talking about what's really happening. They're still doing the tit for tat, left, right, you know, Republican, Democrat. It's like, God, that's not even what's happening here. We are talking about saving, preserving America as it is, as it was founded, you know, going back to that. Or socialism, communism, you know, future that is based on globalism rather than individual and our sovereignty of, as a nation. But you are doing such incredible work. I want to have you back often, certainly, as we go through this next year. Can you tell everyone how to follow you and where to find you? And please, I do suggest you, Rob and I have been, you know, having a glass of wine and watching her Socialism Saturdays. It is about as entertaining as it can get, as it is scary, but she handles it beautifully. So tell my audience how and where to follow you.
First, Mel, I just want to say thank you to you and Rob for having me back again and for tuning into Socialism Saturdays. I really appreciate it. And you know, what you said earlier about, like, once you see the pattern in the language, you cannot unsee it and you see things in a completely different way. So that's what I spend my time doing. I teach people how to decode what the left is doing. I teach why they're doing these things. I teach the psychology behind it. You can find me on YouTube. My main channel is just my name, Carlin Borisenko. I stream every Friday or Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. and then Saturdays, we do Socialism Saturday at 6 p.m. We watch a lot of other leftist content throughout the week. And sometimes we focus on the right too, just for a little bit of flavor and diversity and all that. And so we talk about the culture war and stuff like that. I also have a Substack where I put all my best clips from Socialism Saturday and all the other stuff. It's Carlin, Carlyn.substack.com. And you can always follow me on Twitter at Dr. Carlin B.
Thank you so much. You are doing such important work. And you know what? Just like everyone else that's doing important work, she gets attacked and nobody can take her down. She's got the credentials. She's got the thick skin and she's certainly fighting for good. So thank you so much. We'll see you again. Everyone go follow her. Her links are all below and we'll see you next time. Thank you. Keep it up. Oh, I hope you're enjoying the show. I was just talking on my new Patriot Mobile service. I have to tell you, I'm so excited. They are incredible. They are America first. They align with my values. And you know what? It's unlimited minutes, unlimited text, Wi-Fi calling, unlimited data, high speed, everything that you could use, just like everyone else. We have our time, we have our vote, and we have our money. And the great thing about Patriot Mobile is your service will be exactly the same. Difference with Patriot Mobile is they are an America first company. And what they do is they reinvest their money into causes that matter to me and matter to you and matter to this nation. At Patriot Mobile, those causes are the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the Constitution, and our children's future. So please go to themelkshow.com. Patriot Mobile is a partner of ours. Please use the code MELK. What I can tell you too is that they are supporting me and they are supporting creators because they believe in the First Amendment. They believe that censorship is wrong and they are going to put their money where their mouth is. Do what you can for the creators out there that are doing what I'm doing. Please go to Patriot Mobile, MELK Show. All I can say is thank you so much, guys. Supporting my partners supports me, and Patriot Mobile is absolutely awesome. I checked them out. We're switching to Patriot Mobile, and we hope you do too. Thank you so much. The narrative is falling apart, but as it does, there's so much of this fraudulent disinformation, misinformation, censorship coming from the globalists. And what we need to do is be focused on the facts, cut through everything, be discerning, and get it first and foremost out there to everyone. It is important that you know what is going on. Censorship is getting nuts. You guys know it. There's accounts all over the place that are fake, that are not me. I know you guys send me emails and I really appreciate it. And you report it and it's on Telegram and Instagram and Twitter and they're not me. So I'm super excited to announce We the People with Mel K. Be the first to join. It's a VIP community, just you and me behind a paywall, no trolls, no nothing. We get to know each other. I will give you the facts first. I break a lot of stories a long time before other people. We can talk about past, present, future, history, what we're doing now, solutions for going forward, what 2024 is gonna look like. I'm gonna do breaking news, do a lot of deep dives. I'm gonna bring that information to you guys first in a live Q&A every week. So please click the link below and join me over there. We are going to create a community that is censorship proof, it's cancel proof, it's truth, it's transparency, it's on the road to God, country, justice, everything that we want in one place. This is the most incredible, amazing time to be alive. As hard as it seems and as difficult as the battle has been for you guys and definitely for me, all I know is that we all are part of the solution. We are all involved and invested, and you guys have the passion that I have. So let's join together on live Q&As once a week with me, Mel K, we the people of the United States, taking back this nation. This is so exciting, guys. I've been dying to do this, and we finally got the technology right. So please join me. Click the link below. Can't wait to get started.